The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
I'm not finished yet, it took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a f***ing shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their f***ing asses for f***ing 10 years.
Bernard, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Willie. How are you?
You did Ryan Tuberty and me. So, like, I mean, I don't know how to read into that.
I went to the levels of media in Ireland. So.
Media greats.
Yeah.
So, come here. You did a great piece with Kieran Shannon in The Examiner. It came out yesterday and I was reading it. And you said that you couldn't write a message to the players group to tell them that you're leaving. So you left them a video.
Yeah.
What did you say?
Hello, guys.
basic enough. It was probably the only emotional bit of the whole lot. I had everything planned and ready, and obviously for the last number of years, not knowing when I was going to finish or half knowing, and then the injury probably gave me the energy to go again for another year that I didn't want to finish limping out with a cruciate. But so I knew that I had my timelines all the way along, and I'm quite organised. And the one thing I hadn't prepared for was leaving the WhatsApp group. It was just the day of the announcement. I was kind of saying, God, I actually have to tell these first. Obviously, I'm not going to let them hear about it on social media. So I kind of got a bit emotional. I was actually traveling to London and I was on my own on the flight and on the red eye. And I was like, what am I going to say to these guys? I've been part of that group. I know since before WhatsApp was around, basically, I was saying that with Tuberty. And yeah, it's been a big part of my life. And a lot of those lads have fought with me for years and years, so I just kind of said, yeah, thanks a million for everything. As for me, the journey, the people are very important to me, and the crack, as you know, from our escapades over the years. The medals are great, and they kind of mark, as I said, mark a line in the sand that yeah, we'll come back here in 10 years and we'll celebrate and we'll dine on it, and that's great. But for me, it's the friends you make, the crack, the banter, and so that's the big part for me in leaving the group. So just thank them all for the memories, for the good times, for the bad times. So just kind of left a little note, tried to tell a couple of gags, but I'm not that funny really. just wanted to leave a note.
So that was it. And then you left it immediately. You didn't wait to get all the adulation and Berno, I love you, man, that or any
the,
of this.
That's
kind of
why someone said that to me, and that's where it came into my mind around the whole thing. And I'll tell you truly what actually happened with the WhatsApp. I sent my video message. I wrote my message and I sent it from London and I left the group. So it didn't actually send. So right. I just left the group. This is new info, yeah. So I didn't want to go into it with Ryan on Friday night. So I actually just left the group. All the lads are just looking, going, Bernard Brogan left. So for 24 hours, this happened, and I got a couple of messages from the lads.
You didn't know that this video
hadn't gone through. And I was talking to Mick McCauley the next day, and he's like, oh yeah, God, that's heavy going and stuff. And he's like, what? Someone's talking about a video message. I must have said it to someone. And he goes, what video message are you talking about? I said, the one I sent to the group. Do you not look at it? I said, jeez, Mick, you could at least watch the video I put up. So he said, no, nothing came in. So he had to send it to Mick, who sent it back into the group. So, no, the question was, yeah, do you wait when you send a message and wait for the
Oh, I'd wait.
Would you? Yeah, you would. Yeah,
I have a friend who actually, if he told a joke at a party, he'd wait at the door and left the room. He'd wait at the door. You know,
seems
that, what a great character, that fella. But come here. So you sent them a video and then you met with Jim. So Jim got the personal meeting. The players got the message on the group. Why did Jim deserve the one-on-one?
Well, he's our whatever way you look at it, he's the main man. He's the man who controls our destiny and has done for the last several years. I'm a bit of a romantic in some ways, and I've had lots of conversations with Jim over the years, good conversations and bad conversations around game time and where I'm at and should I go again and where does he see me playing and this type of stuff. And I just thought it was just out of respect for him, as much as at the end. Yeah, I mightn't have got everything that I would have liked out of it, but I got a lot of value out of the year. I learned a lot. And but when you retire, you can't look at just what's in front of your face. You have to look at the whole thing. And I'm really glad I did. I said it to him. I said, I'm just wanting to tell you, I'm grateful for the journey we've been on. Yes, we all want to get the fairy tale ending and come on and kick the winner, but sometimes that doesn't happen. Alan got it.
Yeah.
But
he only got 4 minutes. It was weird. There was no sentiment with him at the end. And there was, the reason I ask you with Jim, because I don't know how you do it, like, because it's human nature. And I know the way I felt when I was dropped, and I was on the other end of the scale, attitude was wrong. But it's just inside you, the disappointment, and how you can hide that, and how you can't resent Jim for that first All-Ireland when you were favourites to win that, let's be honest, and most people would have thought it. That was your last, potentially, most people knew you were going to retire. If you're, I know you were kind of, you didn't want to distract from the group or whatever. But you had to go to the match in your civvies.
Yeah,
like you would be only human if you went, well, I'm not going to meet him. You know, I'm going to text him like everybody else.
Yeah, I think like the replay obviously gave me the opportunity, and I got a lot out of that and got back in. So that took a lot of that pain away. Like, there's no question about it. Like, I was, Jim retired me the first day, you know what I mean? And they went in, and they could have, obviously, when the game went the way it went, but we were hot favourites, and all going on to get the job done, so I wouldn't have been there. I was in the stand. That was a tough one, and a good conversation with Jim before, and I was very disappointed and upset that was the way it was going to end for me.
And would you say that to him, or would you actually get upset with him? Would you say, this is lousy, Jim? Like, would that be a way you would say it, or would you just say, I think I'm going well? Like, how would you show him you were upset?
I just had, we would have talked, he would have gave me a call, and I would have said, told him exactly how I felt. Like, I'm not a big confrontational person. I don't really get too stuck into it. I believe as a footballer, you just do your best, and if it's good enough, it's good enough. You know what I mean? And I don't like ever trying to talk somebody into playing. I prefer to say, right, he's on merit, he's there. Like, having an argument with someone about not picking you, it's not going to change their, fundamentally, they don't believe that you're the man to do the job.
And but it's blowing off steam, maybe.
I know it is blowing off steam, but maybe I'm just kind of, I look at things and in reality from both sides. I know he's got 25 lads, or 24 lads to pick. He's got a panel of 30. I understand the challenges it is. And for me, the most disappointing thing was that I wasn't, in his mind, the right man to get the job done.
Yeah.
So that was more upsetting for me that was the case, rather than not getting picked and having a fight with him. You can do that, you know what I mean? And that's, who benefits from that? No one. You just have a rant. My dad told me when he finished up, and he obviously played in the 70s, and he came back in 82 and 83, and he played in full forward in 83 league, and he got a hit with a box from an awfully full back. He gave him a few words, and he woke up in hospital basically, and he heard nothing back from Heffo or the management team. A couple of weeks later, they rang looking for the jersey, and my dad held that for since. Still, Heffo obviously passed away since, never got the chance to tell him how he felt and that he's disappointed and sort of. And he just said, just don't carry it. He says, I've carried something like that myself for a long time. And
It's a cutthroat business, isn't it?
Yeah, like it's a very difficult job. And in fairness to Jim, he'd always say in team meetings, because this year there was a couple of big personalities that are going to have to be left behind each game, you know. And as much as me and O'Gara would be pushing on and trying to get in past other lads that are there, we didn't push past many, but that would have been big calls as well, big scalps, big names, big, like, several All-Irelands behind him, you know what I mean? So it was a difficult time for Jim to do that.
Yeah.
Was O'Gara and me a bit easier than someone else? Maybe, but it was tough though.
Does anyone sulk in there? Like, you know, like getting on the 26 is so hard to get on it, and I just can't even understand the mentality of Bernard Brogan being delighted just to get on the 26. Do you know, like, that's the way, how has he kept everybody happy? Like, because he doesn't seem the warmest fella. I know he's standoffish from talking to the odd ex-player that might tell you anything. Like, he's not trying to be your best friend in there. How does he keep people from not having a face on them?
I think it's more the group that does that.
Right.
I think the respect of the lads that are in the circle, and fundamentally, like, if you come into the group with a sulk on you, like, and you're looking over at Jack McCaffrey and he's smiling, he's going to go, what's wrong with you? Do you know what I mean? And they'll come talk to you, do you know what I mean? They're all genuine, really decent blokes, you know what I mean? And the management, for me, obviously they're the conduit to playing, and they hold your destiny, but your motives and your attitude and your behaviours are led by the players around you, and they're the guys that drove me on, the guys that I tried to add value to, that I got a lot of energy from, as I said, to get into the team. When lads are asking for your opinions and your advice and different things like that, like, that gave me a lot of energy over throughout the year. I said, like, 5 years ago it would take me to hit the back of the net to get a bit of adulation, a bit of joy in the heart, but now it was like a Mannion asking me kind of for a bit of advice, or Conor Callaghan, or these lads are coming to you and saying, how did you manoeuvre this, or what way this, will you have a look at me strike, and this type of stuff. That's was giving me value, you know what I mean?
Right.
Maybe just when you're not playing, you need to find something
else.
That's where I went too far it. And just little words, and it's mad. Like, and when you think back about this, little things that people are saying to you, and you kind of go, "Geez, that's I got a lot of energy from that." I mean, young lads saying stuff to you, like, "Oh God, am I a bit sad here that this
you
is
to hang on to anything?"
Yeah, that's basically you're trying to hang on to something, because all you want is the respect of that group. It is a special group, and for me this year, I was conscious that I was obviously getting older, and there was a fight. That's this talk of five in a row, and the last thing I wanted at that group, especially whatever about anyone else, was to think that I was just hanging on for a five in a row, or to be part of this just on the coattails. And I was very clear anytime I spoke, especially early on in the year, I was saying, "This is, lads, just so you, I presume he's noticed, but this is nothing to do with five in a row. This is a personal journey for me to try and help you get back up beside you and see, can I add value to this group? And if I can't, I'd be gone at the end of the league," and blah, all this type of stuff. So I just want, like, I was very conscious of that, and kind of, yeah, so that's maybe kind of why I probably overplayed it a bit.
You came on against Tyrone this year, and I was saying on the podcast you were trying too hard. Jesus, I never saw you running around. You wanted every ball. It was like you were just desperate to impress. It was like a trial when you're under 16. Did you feel like that?
Yeah, like I knew that was my only game time, my only chance. So yeah, it basically was like you're a young guy going out again trying to impress. And obviously the way I'm trying to impress is trying to get lads on the ball, and like, I'm not trying to just kick everything over the bar like maybe I did when I was younger, but yeah, getting on balls, trying to link the play, trying to create opportunities, trying to show for balls coming in. So just trying to, yeah, like I knew it 20 minutes, so six or seven touches that had to work. Felt that I was moving well, and I was hoping that it was enough to kind of maybe get another bit of game time, but no.
That was the thing. I think it was the Mayo not making the 26 in the Mayo game. That was probably a bigger kick in the arse maybe than the All-Ireland final one, because you'd come off the Tyrone game, you know, and you'd done fairly well on it. You looked lively to me, and I'm thinking, you know, he's getting back right at the right time.
That was the one that kind of put the nail in the coffin for me in my head. You know what I mean? That, yeah, if I'm not even involved in this one, like, this is the one where actually they'll probably play man to man. They'll probably be a chance for you to get on and get a bit of ball and take on a man. You know what I mean? That there's an opportunity to actually play football, and for my style of football. So to not be involved or to be thought about for that game, that was one that really hurt me. I let it known, told the lads that I felt that I deserved a run, felt like I was moving well, and that I was very disappointed with their call. That was the hard one for me, even more so than the final. As much as the final was,
you kind of knew. Did you feel you had done enough to get from not in the 26 to in the 26 for the final? Like, putting sentiment aside, did you think you had done enough in training
from the Mayo game to the final?
The Mayo game to the final to break in?
Probably not.
So in a way, you could understand. I'm on the outside looking at it.
So that's what I'm saying. Coming from the Tyrone game to the Mayo game, that's the one that really hurt me, because I knew that Mayo to the final, it was never like, you know, you only play 15 minutes football nowadays. Well, it's strategy and kickouts, and you get a few minutes football, but I can't at 35 impress. Do something, impress the gym to change their mind in 3 weeks that they've seen me for a lifetime. Do you know what I mean? So if I wasn't in last week, what was I going to do in those couple of weeks to make them feel, oh yeah, he's our man now? You know what I mean?
Yeah. I noticed Jim had said something to you before the replay, and he said if we need a point later on and it's close, that you're the man to do it for us. But I'm wondering, how did that logic not apply to the first game?
Yeah, that was my exact argument. And the whole reason I came back with Jim is that we're going to go to war at some stage, and I believe that a chance, a play when the game is in the balance, that's when I'll come for. I didn't think I was going to play in the Leinster campaign. I didn't think for me. I was there for one reason this year. I said, I'm a 15-minute man. What do I need to do to beat
in
to
a
be
clutch
there?
Game?
In
yeah.
a clutch game. That's why I'm back here. Yeah. And I wasn't in there. And maybe in the end, that's when he had loads of lads had opportunities in the first game, didn't get the job done. He felt, geez, actually, maybe I do have to go back to the old reliable and see if it comes down to it. He's there for me as an option. As much as you say, yeah, if I had been 2 points down, you put me on, would you not put me on when we were 4 points up? That's another day's conversation.
Well, that's it, I'll swing over one or two. But in fairness, I don't think you would have made the turnover Kevin Mack did on David Moore.
No, I wouldn't chase back that hard. No, definitely not.
You would have been waiting in around the square. But we'll go back to the start, because we all know that you were a late developer, right? And I remember your career going along and myself and Alan thinking, you know, he's not going to get a chance here, because it was before the Leinster final against us, and for all of all games for you to spark into life, it was in that game in 07, because you'd made your debut against Meath. You'd been on the panel a few years and you weren't getting a look in, and we'll talk about that in a minute. But you came on against Meath, then you played against Offaly wing forward and were taken off. And a big huge moment in your career, I think, was Piller sticking with you for the Leinster final, because me looking at it thought you wouldn't make the Leinster final team. Yeah, you scored 1-1, obviously, in that 1-1. Final.
Yeah, and the challenge with, I suppose, the couple of the forwards, even Dotsy O'Callaghan, who was a lovely forward and would have toiled at me back in 05 and 06. Piller had his go-to, he had Alan and Keeney, and he had Ray Cosgrove and these lads that had done so much for him. And he was slow to make big changes. So I got in at wing forward, eventually got a chance. I was moving well in club. I was moving okay with the Dubs, but yeah, I needed a bit of energy from somewhere. And he just, in fairness, he did back me up. I played wing forward against Offaly. It was poor enough. Well, it was okay, but I didn't make any inroads. And then it was that Laois game, that goal, that just kind of, probably for myself as much as for the team, or for Piller, to say, yeah, okay, I feel like I can actually. I'm meant to be here.
Yeah, he did a dance in front of the hill that day. I actually specifically remember doing it.
The physio had to come over to me and give me. I was so tired, I had to pretend I was injured because I was so out of breath. But it was a good day. Scoring in front of the hill is always nice.
Yeah, because you went on, that kicked you on, and I remember you got three from playoff Tomás O'Shea then later on that year, and it struck me that you were a real confidence player. You know that is because the ability was always there. Now you were selfish. I'd say you'll probably admit that yourself.
Pat knocked that out of me. Yeah.
He did. He definitely did. But you probably. Probably a little bit selfish, probably thought you needed to score too much, and probably when they weren't going over, you know, when you were shooting too much, then the confidence is low, and you're doing it to yourself pretty much.
Yeah, I probably very, very much am a confidence player, and I would have always said that when I played games and got scores, that's when I get momentum. Like 2010, when I actually had a great year, it was because I was playing football week, and we went through the back door, and it was week after week, and there was like loads of opportunities, and that's when I got my confidence up, and I was getting a bit of momentum. It's when you're inside forward and you're trying to impress, and you always feel as if it's down to you, and if I don't have 2 points beside, 3 points beside my name from play after this, at the end of this game, I won't be in the next day.
But I'd even think that, and I wasn't a scoring forward 20 minutes gone, geez, I haven't even got a score yet. I can only imagine what's going on inside your head after 20 minutes.
Exactly, especially when after a couple of years of getting the scores, then it got worse again, you know what I mean? And that's probably coming into 16 and 17. Not getting the 3 or 4 or 5 points from play a game was probably affecting me, and as you said, compounding my own worst enemy then. And then I would go out the next day and I don't perform again because I'm worried about, God, I have to kick 6 points today now to make up for it. So, I think you just need, it's a mindset thing. And Pat, in fairness, helped me a lot with it, and got a good bit out of me in 2010 to try and bring other lads into the game and work harder. And then not always been just about trying to get the score, you know what I mean?
Yeah, so that, I think he probably saved you in a way, in that instead of basing playing well around scoring, he based playing well against doing other things that you could add to your game, right?
And it's exactly. And the byproduct of that, bring lads into the game, working hard, tracking back. You look at Mannion now, like those things, they take your mind off your natural scoring. Yeah. You eventually do get up there and get a chance to score. Like the more you bring people into a game, the more ball comes back to you. You know what I mean? That's what I found in 2010, 11, 12, 13, that the harder I worked, the more opportunities I got. And that was because you're not thinking about, now I have to get a ball, I'm going to run, I'm going to take one bounce, I'm going to take a shot. That wasn't my thought process for every play. It was like, right, I need to get on the ball, I need to bring someone to be running off me, and then you just get in more ball. So,
well, that thing, and the other thing is, if you throw three off, your man thinks you're going to throw one off, and then your dummies work off, a lot better. Yeah. Your dummies work a lot better than they had been.
Like if people knew that I was always going to take a shot off, you end up getting blocked because they just know they're going to come down on your right or left foot. So you're dead right. Like if you can keep them guessing, change your game for every play, then it helps you.
Yeah, I was reading it just in the Kieran Shannon piece. You're talking about the one-on-one you missed with David Clark. I would have questioned my whole mindset. This is in 2012, and they obviously went ahead and you pegged them back, but not close enough. It would have questioned my whole mindset and ability to make clutch decisions and plays. I found that hard to believe, considering what your player of the year. You're scoring clutch points in All-Ireland finals only the year before, and you would be that hard on yourself over a one-on-one, which can happen to anyone.
Yeah, I just kept on running through my head the scenario of, I just didn't think that I was in the moment for it. I didn't execute the skill the way I would have liked to do it, and I suppose, yeah, I would have put a lot of pressure on myself maybe as coming from Player of the Year. We just won our first All-Ireland coming in that, yeah, now we're on a momentum. And I felt that I let the team down, that he got a chance. Yeah, we were pegging him back and he got exactly what he wanted. I always feel like I get a chance to make a difference. And Dave Clark was a minute with us and doing a lot of work with, so he knew my game well. And
do you think that was it, or you didn't?
I didn't strike it away. I wanted to strike it low, and like I did against Leash, and the ball rose and just caught the hand. But it just stuck with me for some reason. I couldn't get rid of me because I was saying, why didn't I bounce a pass? And I was through 1-on-1. I'd beaten Jair over the top, so I'd probably 4 or 5 yards. I could have ran around him. He'd come off the.
There's all sorts
of head. That one just stuck with me. That maybe I'd, like the same in 2014 when I missed a couple of frees against Donegal. Took that fairly hard, and that was kind of.
You started doubting yourself then as well. You were thinking that standing over those frees, this isn't going to go over.
In 2010, 11, 12, like I was very confident. I worked really hard in my training and to get into it. For the last 5 or 6 years before that, I did a lot of practice. I was striking the ball really well and I was very confident. In 2010, every ball inside forward, genuinely, I felt this is going over the bar, left or side or right side. And I felt like I had a good chance. And just remember standing over one, the second one, like I missed the first one and the second one. I was like, it was this difficult kick on the left side, nearly out with 40 yards. And I says, I don't know where, like, I'm not sure if I'm going to get this. You know what I mean? I just remember saying that to my head. And sure, you've no chance when you're talking. Your self-talk is talking about that. Kev Mack talks a lot about self-talk and he uses it a lot. But it was just such the Donegal set up and it's a low score and every score counts and the pressure and every score is so important. Yeah. And yeah, maybe it's just because I felt part of. I remember even thinking back to Ray Cosgrove and his kick against Armagh at in 2002. That was a big kick, and
did he doubt that?
I'm not sure that he doubted it, but he was a confident guy. But I just remember he did the, and I was coming into becoming a free taker, took frees, and I remember going, God, I'd hate to have that hanging over me. As in, like, he got such a hard time from the hill that he'd scored 6 goals into that summer, an amazing All Star summer. And yet they carried it with them. So you're always worried about that as a free taker.
And we know you've got a huge backroom team in Dublin. Would there be people there that you could talk to about these doubts or things that might pop into your head like that that would help you?
Absolutely.
Or?
Yeah. Yeah. Bernard Dunn would have chatted to him a lot over the years. And
what does he do?
He's a world champion.
No, he is. But like, I mean, would you talk to him about doubts? Because I often think a life coach, okay, I slag enough now because when he started first, I was like, what the hell is a life? I understand it a bit more now. But he's someone you would have talked to, like
in the early days. I would have now. He's with the high performance boxers now, and he's traveling a lot around Europe and stuff with them. So he hasn't been around as much over the summer. But in the early days, I would have met him. Yeah, met him out in Parmentstown a good bit, and just chatted. Like sometimes it's good to just be at a lunch and a chat with someone. In the more recent times, Gary Keegan's been in as a kind of a sports psychologist and kind of a mindset coach, and he's a powerful guy, very, very powerful. And he's kind of given me moments of clarity throughout my career, from talks he's done to group and myself as well. And and sometimes you get out of those things what you put into them, what you believe in them as well. Like if you're pessimistic on into them, they don't change that, and they just kind of get you to open up and maybe have a conversation. And can they be a conduit between you and Jim or the management team potentially? But I think at times they're there. But did that change? Did I go and talk to them saying I missed those 2 scores? Helped me here. I didn't really, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I kind of carried it.
Because I suppose maybe that's the thing. And if I would be wondering if doubts pop into your head about things, how to stop that happening? How can they change your personality? You know, if that's if you're naturally hard on yourself, I'm just thinking it would be very difficult to stop that.
It is, and in fairness to Kev Mack, who's been a great leader for us over the last number of years, he was selling meat and chickens, and he went into the sports psychology space and done a lot of visualization work and positive self talk and caption and meditation and stuff like that. And a lot of his stuff is understanding the bad talk and then putting it in a box and sending it off, you know what I mean? And just if you accept it, you can own it and push on from it. So it's not easy. I think it's not an easy solution to when you do have a big moment that you feel you haven't performed, how do you actually get past it? It's not to say I didn't get up the next year and try and do better, and maybe carried into games, but just
you were taking off the freeze pretty much then after that Donegal game, were you? Or was that just
Dino's coming through, and Dean's unbelievable striker. He's obviously able to kick 45s. I wasn't able to do that with my knee, kind of never gave me an opportunity to to kick it when I did my cruise show when I was younger, so I couldn't kick them. So you need it, like obviously Cluxon did them kick 45s for the first early years. But Dean is a class act, obviously, with dead ball.
Yeah. Were you relieved in a way that was pressure was taken off you, or were you a little bit like?
Yeah, I didn't. It's nice as a striker, as an inside forward, to take frees. It's nice to get you up on the way off the mark. I always loved an early 21 yard free. After 10 minutes, say I'm on the board now. Even if it's a free, as you say
it's
yourself.
Mad, yeah.
Just as a forward, you just like to get a ball. You just like to get into a game, and frees were nice like that for me. But like in big scenarios, like I was never afraid to take the chance and go for the gap and go for the big score. But Dino was just, he's just different standard of a free taker than me, and we're lucky to have him, you know.
Yeah, you don't know how you would have fared with the GPS coming across your path.
No.
Come here, you give Mossy Quinn a bit of credit on his goal scoring technique, and we know how he can stick them away, but he said you said he's probably the best striker of a goal I've seen. He had the guile to pick a spot and side foot it and put in a bit of pace on it. You know what I mean? And the hardest thing to do is to put a bit of pace on a side footer. It's really difficult technique.
I don't know how he actually does it. Yeah. Genuinely. That's why I kind of mentioned it or tried to explain it badly. But he opens the foot and it's more with maybe the inside of the toe than the bottom, let's say the real side foot. But he is able to pick a spot and put pace on it. Like he's genuinely, like we would always like, obviously, for years we were with Dublin together, and we used to say we're only going for goals and training and stuff like that. Like we used to have great old crack, but I used to watch, analyse the way he did it. I couldn't replicate it like that, but I kind of took. He always went to the bottom corner. Like the thing about got striking for goals, a lot of my goals, if you've seen any of them, I tried to always go low and pass the keeper. It was the hardest place for a keeper to save, and it's not the glory one at the top corner. One or two of them in me day, but
got one against Derry when you're winning well. That's the came back off the back stanchion.
The back stanchion, yeah, that was a nice one.
That was showboating. I don't think Jim was too.
I wasn't
happy
really looking. I just kind of just took it through the left leg at it, but bottom corner, make it hard for the keeper, and you've 100% to getting the score, and that's what kind of Mossy brought to the table. And even in his later years, he probably didn't get the game time he would have liked, but in training, he was always electric. And even with still going with the club, I'd say that man's put his numbers of goals, if you had them on record, for club and county would be staggering. But he was a classy act.
Yeah, there's no doubt he definitely was. In a way, like, I mean, I suppose I was talking about your attitude when you weren't getting on the last couple of years, and maybe you learned from his attitude, maybe you learned from Alan's attitude in, you know, when he took it the right way. Mm. You know, maybe that just one or two bigger names set the tone rather than maybe something Jim Gavin's doing. Would that be fair?
Yeah, never thought of it like that. Yeah, but as I said there, Mossy had a tough run. I remember he used to give our cornerbacks, let's say starting cornerbacks, he'd be on the B team, would have given them an awful third time and getting scores, getting goals. And again, Alan in his finishing year, he was driving on. He was obviously disappointed with the game time because he'd been moving so well and his attitude was so positive in training. I just think it's the right way to act, I think, and I kind of learned a lesson from it in 2016. Was it the first time I was dropped for the replay in the Ireland final, when I was told early, and it's well, I've said it loads of times before, but when the group was looking at me and I knew I was dropped, and they kind of said, I'll just put a positive face and I won't sulk. They'll all be looking saying, oh, first time I've been dropped in 50 caps or whatever.
Were you expecting that to be dropped? Because none of the team played well the first day. Dublin were very, very poor. I think that first half was a bizarre half of football. Yeah. Yeah. So, like, you know the tradition in GAA is for the corner forward to suffer, though. Like, I mean, were you expecting to be dropped that day?
Like, obviously, I knew that I didn't produce the goods the first day. But as you said, there's a number of people. And when you go into a replay, there has to be one or two changes. You see again this year, and Mick McCauley says, I'm make a good habit of being dropped for all our replays, like, you know. And is he an easy person to pick? He kind of half knew. He probably would have been happy with his first game, maybe not, but he actually probably didn't do too badly. But
Kev Mack used to be like that too. If Dublin don't play well and he starts, he's the first man.
I was kind of coming to that.
You're worried about it.
I was worried about it because I was coming off the back of a couple of. Hadn't been my natural kind of killer instinct, so I knew that the pressure was on me, but I just said I'd deal with it the right way and look at the group with positivity. And I heard off the back in that winter that lads had respected that and got a little bit of energy to see me like back in the group, and even when I was dropped for the first time. So that probably was the one thing that said, right, anytime for the future now, that's the way I'm going to act, and hopefully Yeah, and I had to act like that a lot, unfortunately, in the end of it.
A little bit too. But it's almost like you came straight back to where you had started, though, isn't it? In a bizarre way, in your mind. And maybe you were able to deal with it better because...
I've been through that.
Like, were you thinking you weren't going to make it? You're looking at Alan flying and you're not able to break in. Are you thinking, look, I'll just spend a few years in a panel here? Or do you think, look, I'm too good for this?
Yeah, if I hadn't have had Alan and the lads, the Sennins and the Barry Cowles and these lads travelling from home and a car full, Declan Lally, good pals coming to Dublin training in the early days, would I have been around? If I was, I probably wouldn't have been having Alan there and the joy that he had out of it and the family was loving it and they were starting to get together and go to the games and barbecues, and it was just a real positive time, and I really wanted to get out there with him and do my bit. And I'm sure Paulie was the same after us. But yeah, like I felt like I had enough. I felt like I was able. I wasn't out of place as much as I needed to get in and get a chance. But I definitely felt like if I kept at it, if I worked hard, I knew I wasn't as naturally gifted as him. I knew I was going to have to work harder. I was off the back of a cruise, but I came back. I was stronger. I did things that I was confident about, but I knew that I was going to have to do things a bit differently. And that's where I went away, kicked scores myself, and went down the backfield and said I need to be 10 times more accurate than everyone else, that when I get a shot, has to go over, and that stood to me.
How were you naturally always accurate? Is that an awful lot of hard work?
I probably would have been okay. I probably would have been reasonably accurate as a youngster, but I worked a lot on it. I would have worked a lot on my left foot, I would have worked a lot on my right foot, and I'm nearly more comfortable striking my left foot on the run than I am my right. I did an injury on my right. I always used injury as a chance to be better at something else. I remember I pulled my right groin and I was coming back from that, and me and Ross on Saturday night, and we were reminiscing of the good times. Ross McConnell would be one of your best pals, and he was saying, I remember when we were youngsters in 16, you pulled your groin and we were going out kicking, we used to go out kicking ball. Ross had ambitions to play with Dublin with me, obviously. And he was saying he only kicked your left foot for about a month, and I was catching balls behind the goal. I was a midfielder and you were pinging frees and stuff like that with your left foot, and spending a month just kicking with your left foot. Like, that stands to you, you know what I mean? And that's why I always say to kids when people say, oh, I got injured and I'm really down, I say, well, use it as an opportunity. You're still young, like, and be better at something else. I went back from a cruciate, put on about a stone of muscle. I went to hit the gym, and then I was only small. I took a bit of a growth spurt. I kind of came back a different man than I was from before the injury, and that stood to me. So I was trying to pass that one on.
Yeah. So what did you work on in the last 2 years? That you worked on being a better teammate, maybe, or giving off the, like you just said, giving off that advice and being like a mentor, maybe.
Yeah, basically, genuinely, because I knew I wasn't going to offer as much on the pitch. I wasn't going to be given the opportunity. When I met Jim, I said, I'm a 15 minute man, and I'm going to try and get be like, well, what do you need from a 15 minute man? Like, what can I offer? Accuracy, obviously, doing that type of stuff, and also adding to the group and being that. So that's a role I took.
Yeah. Did you didn't advise Conn to shave his head and look like a meaner individual this year or anything, or who told him to do that?
He took that one on himself. Now, and I think Mannion followed him then, and then Smalley followed him as well. So down there,
Smalley was always a mean individual.
He was always mean. That's fair.
Well, like, the difference in Conn this year has been incredible. Like, I mean, we know he likes to take on his man, but this year he's just been taken it to a completely other level.
Yeah, and maybe it's the hurling, kind of the natural hurler in him that kind of gets the ball on the stick and likes to take on a man. That's obviously where his bread and butter. And in football, he's just kind of kicked on a gear. He's gotten much more solid. He did a lot of weights over the winter. And he's looking, he's a class act. And he actually, in between the final and the replay, I was kind of saying, what am I doing here? There was a ball in one of the games before where I didn't take a shot on it, passed to the back post to O'Gara, and it says, Conn would have knocked that into the back of the net. Like, a me 5 years ago, that would have been back of the net. And why am I waiting for someone for a hand pass, trying to be the team player? And I go, that's it, I'm done. It's not after getting me into the first final. As I said, the next Saturday after the final, I went out and scored. Me and O'Gara went full forward line, and Dean, and I scored 4 points. So Gary got a couple and Dean got a couple, and we just ran right for 15 minutes.
Who was the three in the full back line?
Can't remember now. I'm going to call them out. But I said, I'm doing what Conn did. Every time I got the ball, I just took on the man.
But how do you see, that's the weird thing. You go to a trial under 16, like I used to play wing back, your man might score 4, but you score 3 from play, you're being noticed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? You have to do things to get noticed. Being a team player, it'll only get you noticed if you've been a selfish, like that would have got you noticed under Pat Gilroy, because that's what he wanted from you.
But yeah, it didn't work for me.
That's not going to get you into the 26 by being selfless, I suppose, isn't it?
That's what I thought. And the Tyrone game, I was going to come out and I'm going to say to Jim and Jay and them, give me the ball, I'll be back to goal, and I'll pop by the runners and I'll get a score in the loop, or but I'll bring the lads into it. And that's where I was going for most of the year, and that it wasn't working for me. It wasn't valued, as you say. So yeah. Just that last week, and I said, I wish I had done it 6 weeks earlier. I said,
that's the thing.
I'm just going to go do what I always done, and it's taking a man on and kicking the ball over the bar, or creating a goal opportunity with a 1-2.
Because when you think about it, I know hindsight is a great thing, but if they were seeing you in a clutch game coming on to get an important point, they have to see you kicking pints, right?
They're not bringing you on for that 10 minutes
to throw the ball around, right?
Yeah, 100%. So, you know? Yeah, so that's
I should have rang you.
You'd be my personal coach now for the club. We're in relegation battle now at the weekend. You couldn't help us out with it.
Will you beat Sylvester's, no? Or you've in another one again?
We're in league. We got out of championship at the weekend. We beat Sylvester's, so we stay in senior championship. We still have to beat Temple Oak at the weekend, and then if we win that, we'll be playoff against Bridget. So,
all right, okay.
Still in the dogs.
Well, I refuse to get plunked. It's club talk into this. I only have you for a limited time. Come here, another thing I thought was an interesting thing. So in 2015, you scored 621. You almost won the Golden Boot. You took no frees. And you still kind of thought, God, I'm bluffing my way through this. And I thought that was interesting because you've been getting on the end of moves. And a lot of your scores some of the time were on the end of a sweeping move. You've the patience to be the last man and you're able to finish it. Like, was the, if you're not getting one out in front and turning and getting, I don't know, like, would you even count a palmed goal? It would be like half a goal for you.
Yeah, half a goal. Yeah, as you say, if you don't create it, yeah, makers, takers. But no, maybe it was just, I think just the club, the big games, like the finals, the semi-finals, that I would have kind of dealt with myself as in we've gotten some of the Leinster games. I had some great scoring returns and Leinster campaigns and that year as well. What's good players count themselves against the best, you know what I mean? And the big games like the semi-finals, the finals, and over the years there's been times when I've done okay, but when I question myself, I kind of look back on the Kerry games and big games in semi-finals and finals, see how did I get on then.
And in general you did it. You've played in so many big games, you could make any case to say you didn't play well then, or you know, but in general you were doing it for Dublin on the big day. That must feel good, and I think that's what you'd be remembered for as well, especially you say you had a good connection with the Hill, and the Hill, there's no hiding place from the Hill when you're down right in front of them. They see what you're doing firsthand, you know? So if you have that connection, there's no bluffing them.
Yeah. No, and they've been very, very good to me, as I said.
Well, you could bluff a few of them up there.
Some of them are so far back, they don't know who was on the ball. But I've been very lucky in my time. And as you said, I spent a lot of, I felt my greatest strength as a footballer was trying to be in the right place at the right time. A lot of my scores were finishing a move where other people worked really hard and I just got in the loop or something like that. And that's maybe why I was like, Jesus, it's that I'm just doing the easy bit, tipping over the end. But then I kind of, as you said, saying, no, you're getting to the right place. You're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
You're looking at a team.
It's a skill being patient like that and staying in there, right?
Yeah, like you kind of look at the other team, a different team, saying, well, he's not getting on that. You know what I mean? So maybe you're actually doing something right. So you're just trying to find your angles and not be too hard on yourself. But it's been a roller coaster over the last 15 years. As you said, tough to get in and tough coming out, and I had some lovely time in the middle.
Impossible to get in, really hard to get in, incredible middle, and then a shorter, poor end. But there was a spell from 2009 to 15 where, it's you and the Gooch, and it's in the very top tier of Gaelic footballers. So that must be, especially knowing where you came from, you know what I mean? Did you sit back and appreciate that and go, there's no way you could have imagined when you're in your third year of being a sub for Pillar that you're going to be a player of the year, have a knockout into an All-Ireland final and win seven All-Ireland?
No, definitely not. No. It's been, and you don't really realise it probably until you look back, and even just saying that there, it's still kind of, still not kind of even sinking in, but it's been an amazing journey. Had some great days, and I think every year I've learned, and as much as you say, it's been the last couple of years have been tough. I got a lot out of it personally, for different reasons. I said I've 7 All Irelands. I never would have thought I would have got it. I won my first one at 28, and to win 7, it's frightening.
It's outrageous, it really is. 7 All Irelands. Like some of those young lads will get 10. Like it's incredible. Like please they should. God, yeah. They should. Yeah. Please God. says you. Just quickly before you go, like, I mean, you mentioned that you're not confrontational. And like, I mean, we mentioned the Gooch and his kind of way of playing, and you never got involved in anything on the field. Mm. Like, and I can only imagine what you had to listen to down through the years. Like, you know, is that just your non-confrontational personality? I'm not interested in this, and concentrating. Yeah. It must be hard sometimes. Like, you're being surrounded by players, you miss a shot, you're being goaded.
I think if you react to it, and I made a decision very early in my career to not react to it and to look past and to reflect what people are looking at me. So a Neil McGee or someone trying to have a go at you, if you just look past it, if you don't engage with it, if you don't give energy to it, they eventually stop.
Right.
And that's what I did early in your career. And I know Alan had some tough times with Tyrone's and stuff. And
Conor Gormley, yeah.
Conor Gormley and a few of the lads. But I was lucky enough, maybe, yeah, for whatever reason, I didn't engage with it. And
would you see them stopping in that actual game, or would you see them just coming back the next day going, just not starting it at all?
Yeah, during the game. Yeah, there'd be times when someone will try and have a go with you and pinch you and melt with you, and if you look past them and take the next ball over the bar, that shuts them up quick enough.
Yeah, no, it probably does. Well, come here, we mentioned that you won Footballer of the Year 2010, 7 All-Irelands, 4 All-Stars, 5 National Leagues, 13 Leinsters, Jesus, and you captained Ireland International Rules. So, like, I mean, it's an incredible career. As you mentioned, it's not about all that. Still nice to have them all, yeah, the same. It's not all about that. You talked about the journey. I'll just finish with you about something Jack McCaffrey said about you, which probably sums you up better than all those awards. He says, just to see the kind of teammate he's been, the kind of friend he's been. It's amazing. He has twins. He's married. He works in business. He's a very different stage of his life than I would be. But he takes the time with everybody, from the youngest member of the panel to the oldest. He's just a fantastic man. Wow. Nearly bring a tear to your eye, that, wouldn't it?
That's emotional. Yeah. Jack is a good guy.
But that's just everything you said, and the role you spent the last 2 years doing. You probably won't even be able to quantify what those younger lads, how they appreciated that. So that's,
yeah,
you know,
hopefully.
Okay. No, just have great. To get a few of them on the show here to tell me about how much they appreciate it.
Ah, they will.
When you retire, right? Fair enough. Thanks very much
Thanks
for coming in.
Pleasure.
The GA Hour is sponsored by Paddy Power. Money back as a free bet on any championship match on live TV. If you're losing, first goal scorer bet gets a goal.
I'm not finished yet. It took me a long time to get here.
Both players have spoken with each other, and they regret what happened. They've had a frank discussion with each other, and they're both of them are keen to now focus on getting back their county jerseys.
That these fellas will get such a shell shock next Saturday evening that we put them back in their houses for 10 years.